I'm Tim Berg.
All right. Welcome to the Hack Hunted and Radio Show number 11. I'm your host, Jim Minadio. I'm the president of Zero Surge, a manufacturer of power quality filters that are used for surge protecting sensitive electronics. With Zero Surge, you have peace of mind that your electronics are kept safe. Today's guest is Dennis Harabin. More about him in a moment, but you can say hello.
Hello.
Continuing the format of the show from last week, I'm going to have only one news item to discuss, to giving us more time to hear from Dennis. And as always, I end the show with some historical perspective. Today, I give you a brief history on the concept of artificial intelligence. But first, the weather. Should have had it open, sorry. Again, it seems like every week I'm here, it's cloudy. I look out this one window. I've never seen blue sky in the 10, 11 weeks now. It's pretty amazing. But it is a lot cooler than the last few weeks I've been here. So it's only 75 degrees. Looks like we're going to get some kind of storms tonight, some scattered showers. But tomorrow, Thursday, 81, Friday, 85, Saturday, 80, all sunny. Great Labor Day weekend coming up. So take advantage of that if you can. So let's see. I guess we got to do a couple of commercials, and then we're ready to go.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hunt and Hunted In every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hunt and Hunted In provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunted & Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunted-chamber.org.
Okay, we're back. Again, my name is Jim Minadio with Hack Hunted & Radio, and there's Dennis Harabin, right?
Yes.
For some reason, I want to say Dennis Haysbert, the actor. Like, that name always pops in my head when I...
No, I've got a face for radio. I'm an actor.
Hey, you know, there's lots of faces on TV nowadays. So we'll get to you in a second as far as your introduction. I just want to... One announcement, because tomorrow is the Hack Hunted and Meetup. That's how Dennis and I are regulars there, so you can come see both of us. We were promised to have beer made for the Hack Hunted and blend that we were making, but Bob has some apologies. He did not get to it yet, so it won't happen probably till next meetup. So if you're coming out specifically for the beer, well, you could still drink some beer, just not going to be the CPU beer that
we'll
be designed.
In time for the Oktoberfest.
Oktoberfest, there we go. So there's something still to look forward to. Again, it's tomorrow, 7 o'clock at the Lone Eagle Brewing Company. And what we're going to do tomorrow is a little different, and it's going to hopefully be some fun, and you can win some beer prizes. So what we're going to do is speed pitching. And what I did, Mark and I got together and created a list of 20 or so different kinds of things. Half of them are going to be real things, like waterbed was one that I can remember. And some of them are going to be fictional from, like, movies or different worlds, like a lightsaber, say. And you're going to pick one of these items out of a hat, and you're going to have to sell it to us. And these items have never existed. So it's not like you have to sell a waterbed and we have waterbeds. It's going to be like as if you've never had waterbeds ever before, and this is a brand new product. And so you have 3 minutes to sell it.
Nice.
So we're all going to pretend we never heard of these. And so I think the other one is I put sliced bread. So that's a good one. So it'd be interesting to see who's going to say this is the best thing to happen since. Exactly. So it should be fun to do. And we'll all vote on who's had the best pitch. And the winner will get some extra tokens for beer. So it should be a fun night. And then Mark also has an update on all the innovation stuff that's going on. There's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of projects he's juggling. You know, I don't even know how he gets through it all, but his whiteboard is completely full of project in the middle of things going on. Some of them pretty exciting. Some of them are going to affect everybody in the county. Some of them maybe only affect a few people, but you know, I'm privy to some of them, and it's some good stuff that he's working on. So why don't we introduce Dennis then before we get to the news story. Dennis is a multifaceted person. I mean, I was looking up his bio on his website. I like your blog. It's called Earn Your Jelly Bean. You know, you could explain that in a second. And then, so you do insurance through Liberty Mutual.
Correct.
You're a CPA.
Yes.
So you do that work. You run a place called ProjectScholarship.com.
Yes.
Which involves a college scholarship in a unique way. And that's funny. Should have turned that off. Apologize. That's twice now I've done that. And then the last thing is Cloud Corridor.
Yes.
Which we've never talked about that. That's the one thing I don't really know about you.
Sure.
So that would be interesting to learn about that too. So that's four different things he's juggling at one time. And so it makes it easy for you to earn your jelly bean every day
because
you have many different things to earn them through. So why don't you tell us more about, I mean, the insurance and CPA stuff's probably explanatory to people, but let's talk about the project scholarship. What are you doing with that?
Well, they kind of all build off each other, so I'll kind of say how they all came together.
Okay, sure.
So really when you first of all, Cloud Corridor is a tech. I used to do a lot of startups, and I actually built startups and went through the startup phase, raised capital, was recognized by Google on some different things. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. It's really hard to get a startup, to get it launched, to get everything through. And we raised capital, and we had one particular project that was working out really well, but it dealt with nonprofits, and it dealt with the ability to actually, it's called Sputter, give sports updates.
Okay.
And it would geocast the field. So, like, we went to Diamond Nation, we sucked in the field, and it takes all the tweets and Instagrams and everything when that was public, and we created SPUDs or sports updates so you can get updates around your kids' sporting events and things.
Okay.
But the life cycle was too long. We had to, and we said, we'll make money, but we're not going to make 10x. So we had to return some capital from that. We actually gave money back. Mm-hmm. And what we realized in that process was we're not going to reach that 10x multiple, but we're really good at building stuff. Our team was – the real asset we had is our development team.
Right.
So I'd actually in a previous life early on, I'd taken a staffing from public. I was one of four founders of people that started, created it, and then we merged it with some others, and it was a finance and accounting firm. It's called Access. It's still around today. It was merged into a couple other entities since then.
Okay.
And so the staffing end I knew really well. So what we did is we took my development team and Cloud Corridor, we help companies move to the cloud. But we actually are contract developers for them and actually help develop whichever platforms or whatever they need built. My team will develop them. But it's we're very niche. We're not one that takes over large projects and runs by. I like to call it my Delta Force of developers.
Okay. So you go in, you take care of one app or one,
well,
the, even part
well,
of an app.
And it's even better than that from the perspective of it's really a developer first basis. It's kind of the Silicon Valley of Poland, and that's where my development team is.
Okay.
And there's three universities, and what we do is they train in the boot camps. So everyone that's not part of Cloud Corridor actually trains the best developers in this section of Poland.
Oh, wow.
And they're all current. So it's almost
like... How did
like,
you meet people in Poland then? Is that part again, of your
just
background?
Just from my startup days and getting the right... Someone connected me to someone and I took care of my team. And so what this is all about is giving the... it's like the Delta Force. We pick the projects we work on. We don't do it for the revenue and for the money. We do it for the challenge. And this team wants to pick the best projects and they only want to work with the best developers. So it's really almost like a co-working space in Poland. Mm-hmm. And then I just get them the contracts when they need it. But when we're working on getting a contract, the focus on the contract is what's in it for the developer, not just the revenue, because we already know it's the best developer. So we get them, we're less expensive than most of the ones out there, and we have pick of which contracts we want to work on because the developers are that good. And when they're in there, they want to work on things that are challenging to them.
Mark.
So that's what led us.
Mark's making a little appearance,
and that's
he's
what
led on the camera there too, because the door is open.
And that's what led to, and that is actually what led to Project Scholarship coming to existence. Because one of the
projects
we're working on is building builds AI systems for colleges and universities to determine a likelihood that a student will enroll. Mm-hmm. And to help that student through the sales cycle. So it's an AI system, and a lot of the schools have it. There's different versions and variations of it. But to take that college sales funnel, they're determining not just what the AI will determine, not only what's the likelihood that the student will enroll and to fill the bucket, but how much aid do they need? Which student should I go after? How one I should go after? And what's the next step to move them to that sales process? So when you're applying for college, you don't even realize that it is one big sales cycle, and you're being sold. And some schools are using, when you log into the network, how long have you stayed in different places? And then it determines what
to do. So they know what major you're looking at. So if you're in, like, perfect example for me is my son is going to college Saturday. So, you know, we went through this whole process in the last year, and it was amazing how many people contact you.
Oh, yeah.
And the mail and the amount of money that's spent on that.
Oh,
it is amazing.
And if you look at it as any business, it's the lifetime value of a customer over the loss of acquisition costs and what it is to acquire that customer. And the discount rate is between no two people pay the same for school. So, again, financial aid only pays so much. So they're looking for certain full pays. They're looking for various pieces. So based on your background, who you are, the AI and the machine learning, they want different people to know who to bring in. And then it tells them what the next step is. What do I need to do to get this student to come to us, because we want this student meets certain criteria we have. This student's going to pay the bills, and then we're going to bring them along. And should we give them more aid? Should we give them less aid? We don't want to give them any more aid than we have to. So while being in this industry and knee-deep in this industry, I was at a conference, an aid conference in Austin, Texas, with Robert Muhammad, who's the head of North Carolina's financial aid, and he's a big player in he's with Winston-Salem State University, and he's a thought leader for the historical black colleges and universities. And we were having the conversation. He challenged us to say, the government, the aid money is going away. The loans are things. I mean, the government right. money is going and our schools aren't that expensive, but we're only talking about $5,000-$7,000. But the money isn't going to be there. How do our students do? I challenge. How are we going to get new money into the system to pay for schools? Because the schools can't, you know, reduce the cost that quickly, mm-hmm. and the whole generations are getting cut out, and the expense of that. And even when they graduate, they have all this expense. So that's where Project Scholarship came from. Give me a challenge, I got to solve it. Right. So we came back, yeah. and what it is Project Scholarships are projects that students do in exchange for scholarships. So the company puts out a scholarship, and it's a set amount they know ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And right now we're keeping it very small so it can scale. So a $250 project, a $500 project, or a $1,000 project. And then the company determines first, second, and third place winners of that project. So the company already knows they're only going to pay $250. The difference.
What kind of projects are these?
We're keeping it at marketing right now to keep it simple, and then
so like logo designs and.
Well, it's actually broken down to very simple. It's a social media post is a $250 project. It's a blog post for a $500 project, and then it's a video for a $1,000 project. The difference being for the company, the value to the company is. A student can create a blog post in 5 minutes, and you can have multiple students. A student can do 20 entries, 30 entries. So the company's going to pays $250, but they may get 100 entries. Now, half of them are not going to be that good, mm-hmm. and the right. other, but they may get 25 or 50 good posts for 100. The students are doing it not just to win the scholarships, but to build their
resume. Do the companies get to keep these posts?
Oh, yeah. Everything that goes submitted. So it's a contest in order for, and the posts, a lot of times the posts will be to post it out there, and they're going to award first, second, and third place based on how many shares they get, how many other things they
okay.
get. So it's building that marketing engine. And the reason we're doing marketing first is because it's not just Project Scholarship, although we've got support from Google and we got support. It's not about your Fortune 100, your Fortune 200 companies. They're willing to invest and take a risk on a college student or a student with no experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people in the Chamber of Commerce in Hunterdon, and the people right here on Main Street. What company here is going to take a risk on a recent college grad if they don't know them, if they haven't worked with them?
Right.
So what this is doing is there's the three pieces of the puzzle that are broken in higher ed is that the schools aren't making any money because they've put their fixed costs so high. So there's colleges actually running out of money and closing, and they're going to continue to close. The parents and students are like, are you kidding me? Are you freaking nuts? $200,000, the value's not there. And then the company's coming out at the end saying, we can't trust the kids that come out. Like, they don't know anything. They expect they're fed sushi. They're sitting in this thing. The projects, so they need to make $80,000 just to cover their costs, but they're not worth $80,000. The project and the skills that they learn aren't there. So the companies put the actual skills and projects that people want done. Okay. And then they can actually get the kids get the experience in it. So eventually we're going to have more projects than just these three. We just kept it that simple. And then we're training people how to do each one of those projects. So anyone could go there, and it doesn't have to be an active current college student. It could literally be someone does this project, you bank your scholarship, and you can use it at a community college for a guitar lesson. You can or whatever.
So you could start before you're even in college age, even.
You can start a cool.
So like you're, you know, a ninth grader, and you know your parents are not going to help you with everything for college, and maybe, you know, you're not a 4.0 student, but you're really creative at writing something.
Right.
And so you can write a blog. So what would they do? It'd be like, say, for me, for Zero Surge. I mean, maybe I'm different because it's a manufacturer. But so it'd be like for a local company.
Well, no, I could explain it for you. Yeah. Particularly. So what would happen is you'd put up that scholarship and you'd say, here's the message of Zero Surge. And here's what we're trying to get out. And what we purposely picked these three things because it's about telling a story. All three of these. And marketing is about telling a story. So we want the students to first learn how to tell a story. Mm-hmm. And then turn around and go, now make it your story. And build, that's how you go about finding a job. You need to tell your story. So when you're creating a post, this is how you create a social post and do that. When you're writing something, write about yourself and put that out there. When you create a video about yourself and go out there. So you're going to give the criteria, this is our story. And then multiple students are going to tell that story for you in different ways. And then you get to make a relationship with those students before they're in school. But what was really interesting, and I spent about an hour this morning with Great Expectations in Somerset, New Jersey, they're in Franklin Township. They are they help women who are drug addicted and certain things, and have they're a house for where they stay and everything. Mm-hmm. We're actually going to have when we're training the students how to do these things, we're going to be training. We're going to use their as a subject matter. So when you tell that story, tell that nonprofit story. We talked to animal shelters about telling those. So when the students are learning how to do this, they're learning to tell the stories of local businesses, other businesses. So that social media piece gets out there, and then when we're ready to scale our back-end infrastructure, with the pieces are there. Like one of the things that we're looking at running a pilot with Great Expectations are other projects for different companies. So we can put any type of project on this platform. Mm-hmm. And all the platform does is allows the company a very easy way to exchange scholarship for work to be done. So we're sucking back the jobs that are being done overseas, mm-hmm. by letting students do that and learn certain skill sets. But you can go pro early by doing these projects. Companies spend a lot of money recruiting.
So they can
students.
Just hire you right before you even go to college.
I have a tuition reimbursement program. Come here. Why don't you? Or this doesn't require a degree. I don't care if you have that piece of paper or not.
Right.
You're really good at doing what we need. But more importantly, it teaches the students. Because the companies tell us it's very virtual. It's a fluid platform. The companies are telling us what projects they want on our platform. Mm-hmm. And that's what goes on there. And the reason we use education and the reason we use we bank the scholarship money is for tax reasons and everything. You basically, you don't have to pay that. Like an internship, they can compete. And then they get that. It can only be cut to a non-profit college or university so that you can use that money that you've banked to improve yourself, to go on.
So because it's a scholarship, it's not a competition either, right? Because then you'd have issues with laws with that.
Right.
And so if this was totally not related, if it was just give you money, then it becomes a competition of skill.
Right.
And now you're regulated by New Jersey gambling laws probably, right?
And what with all of this, what they're doing with that is that, you know, we're focusing in on the company picks the first, second, and third. But mm-hmm. we also have a way to give Amazon things or like to people who they like and all. But it's really about getting the students, exposing the students to real-world work and mm-hmm. then exposing the company to students that want to do the work. And it's all about effort. It's not about where you're from. And with Robert Muhammad and some of those things that we were talking about, it's like everyone's got a fair playing field. It's coming in and saying, because you're just looking at the work that was done, not where you're from, not the what the resume says, not what the...
Right.
Because we know from the scandals,
yeah.
colleges, I mean, there's a big break between reality and what the schools sell.
right. Well, interesting stuff. So we got to take a quick break.
Sure.
And then we'll come back. Maybe we'll do is we'll talk about the story that I promised that we'll talk about real quick, and then we'll get into some of the insurance stuff too.
Take your time.
So let's, very good. Let's hit our first commercial.
Okay. Folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care. At a moment's notice, Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Hi, we're back. Jim Minotti here with Hack Hunterdon Radio and Dennis Harabin. And so we were talking about the college scholarship world and using his project scholarship as a way to help finance college or even to find employees and things like that. So it's very interesting. The website is projectscholarship.com.
.org. Well, we have .com, but .org is the main engine. The okay. .com is just the...
Is the advertising?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. For sureware.
So if you want to find out more about that, definitely check it out. And so the scholarship money can be used for any nonprofit school.
Yep. What happens is we bank it, and twice a year we cut the check and mail the check. So the mail and that's what keeps the control, that the check is made out to a college or university. So the anyone can do a project, but it does you no good if you can't cash the check at a college or university. So that's how we make sure that it's domestic talent that the companies can hire.
Okay. Now, can it go to one of these for-profit schools?
No.
So it can't go to, like, University of Phoenix?
Nope. And that was just something that we declared. I mean, we can change that. Our board can vote otherwise. But a part of the problem with the student – it's about addressing a $1.6 trillion student debt issue that's affecting all of us. Mm-hmm. And they're the biggest culprits of what drove up.
What about something like a trade school? Would that be considered for-profit?
Most of them are nonprofit.
Most of them are. Okay.
So basically your for-profits are what you would think of for-profit. They're businesses.
Okay. Yeah.
Even though the nonprofits are businesses too. I mean, there's a check and balance in there.
Okay. Okay. So that's good. All right. So let's go over the story real quick because I promised it, and it's kind of interesting. I've mentioned a few times in other shows about solar roof systems and how, like, even the Tesla one is getting – they got approval for building their little tile version. So there's a company, and the problem is this story. They won't tell you, I guess, because there's still some ongoing litigation. But it's – I get through these magazine that – International Association of Electricians. Mm-hmm. They give us a weekly newsletter with some of the stories like this, and a lot of them are investigative. And this one was kind of interesting. There was a solar company, and they don't say where because, like I said, they don't want to get the local jurisdiction in trouble because there were some issues. Basically, it's these stripped solar panels. I probably could show a picture of it, see if it shows up on the... Probably will show up on there. We have a delay, so it's kind of hard to see if I was doing it in frame. But basically, it's a very thin solar panel tile system. And the installer was going did a bunch of homes in the neighborhood. And what happened was a couple of them caught fire. And they didn't burn down the houses, fortunately, but they did do some extensive damage. And what happened was the inspector then first thing they do is they look at the back to make sure that it was first they look to make sure it was inspected and during the installation, which theoretically it was. But on the back of the panels, there's supposed to be a UL certification on there, which there was. Now, this printout cut out some of the picture. I'll show Dennis. Basically, it's got the UL logo. Yep. It's got this SunPower logo at the bottom. But then also this other company called Connect Engineering. Well, Connect Engineering doesn't have a UL license to sell this equipment. So they were using SunPower's mark for making these panels. But SunPower is like, well, we only make the panel itself. We don't make all the other things that attach to it, the outlets, the wires, the junction box, the physical structure. We just make the thin film panels. And so this other supplier was taking it, slapping this label on it, thinking, all right, well, that's good enough for us, wiring it up, and they never were tested for their design. So you have to be very careful. If you get into solar, make sure the company you're dealing with has a national reputation. I would even ask them to see the panels. Go ahead and check every UL, Intertek. There's other, besides UL, there's Intertek. There's 16 actually different companies that are legally allowed to test for safety. And they don't all do solar. So whatever that label has on there, if it's UL, Intel, or Intertek, go online. You can log in, see their certification, see that it is for these panels. There's a number it should match. If it doesn't, tell the guy, go find it and get it to me, because that's, you don't want to risk your house, your life, or your property over this. So, just something to be aware of. It's a it's kind of, solar's kind of slowed down recently. Tesla actually even doesn't, they own Solar City, and they were reporting like a third of the installations than they were 5 years ago.
And I think you saw that they were sued by Walmart.
Yeah, Walmart is suing them too for having some fires at their stores, which is also going to be an issue. But again, it could be something like this where, that maybe they didn't use the right certification, because it's not just the panel that gets certified. It's when you start putting other wires to it, that's a different certification, because it's the system that has to be certified, not just the panel. Like in ZeroSurge, our plugins are their own system. So once you plug it in, it's good to go. But we have some OEM modules that are what's called a recognized component. So they have the safety certification for how they are, but then when you put them in another system, that has to get another certification by some, the end user. So, or the end manufacturer. And so there's a difference between that. So if you ever see something and it just says UL recognized component, and it's a whole system that's ready to go, start questioning it, because that's a big thing. And it does happen, so be careful about that. All right, so that was our quick story there.
Oh, nice.
So let's dive back into what you're doing. So going back, I guess, where your blog is called Earn Your Jelly Bean. Yeah.
So when I was doing this and traveling a lot, to sell to all these colleges and universities, I was obviously on the road a lot. And May 1st is a huge day for decision-making, and that's the big decision.
Signing day, right?
Yeah, the signing day. But and so I'm trying to explain to my daughter, who happens to be pre-K at the time, think of how am I going to do this? And being a tech geek, I basically said, I'm going to create a system. So I said, it's got to have user interface. So that's what the blog talks about. It's about how it creates it. And what the system actually was, because sometimes the best systems, as Steve Jobs knew, were the simplest, the easiest. So what we did is I created a jelly bean jar, and then we put in the jelly beans, enough jelly beans for the year, so I can watch that jar go down. And every day we make a decision. Like Avery's got to come to me. My daughter Avery comes to me and says, and we say, it's jelly bean time. Did you earn your jelly bean today? And if not, why not? And let's learn what decisions you made that were bad. And on the flip side, Daddy's role is to be there, to be able to do that. Daddy's role is to make good decisions along the way too, and to make good decisions and to put the family first. And so I was traveling so much and doing all this stuff with AI and a lot of things that were happening in the tech world, I realized I kind of lost that human connection. And I learned more doing this jelly bean jar than Avery learned in the year. And we still do it today. We do it every day.
How many years is it then?
We're going in 2 years.
2 years, wow.
And I have 12 years to do it. And what happens is, I hope, God willing, I'll have 12 years. If not have I done it before. But, I mean, again, it's to value every day, and it's to look at every day and to watch that jelly bean jar shrink, and then we take pictures with it throughout and everything. And really, this is going to be Avery's college resume. So we're building her resume as what she does through life, through every year as we go.
Do you record every day, like the good and bad, or is it
something
you just talk
about? Once a month I add a post to it to kind of talk about it and what it is and kind of like a piece to it to earn your jelly. And part of what – and when I learned to earn my jelly –
But even privately between the two of you, you guys don't –
No,
you
we don't keep
score.
No, no. What we do is, again, she either gives it up and or I give it up. And to be honest, I've given it up more than she has. She's gotten extra jelly beans more than I've gotten hers. I'm blessed because she takes after her mother that way. But, she makes good decisions. But as far as going through, that led me to actually change careers. And what I did is, you know, I was looking at what's happening and what's going on, and getting back to the AI. And the more you understand AI, the more you deal with AI, the more scary it is. But and not only is it scary, the more you realize it need human interaction. So what all AI does is it makes it a lot easier to make certain types of decisions and bucket things into buckets and to make the pieces. But in the end, it doesn't factor in the human effect. It doesn't. So a ecosystem will never be able to take that human aspect into it. And so I looked at what areas, what should my job be that I wanted to do when I'm here? And I did my homework and I found, you know, because of technology, Liberty Mutual is a company. You probably hear them advertising, email and bug and everything. Yeah. They're using technology really well, but what they get is the combination of human and tech. So the systems help to develop what we need to do, but in the end, it's a human that I get to help them to determine their auto, their home, their different insurance. And why that's important, if you look at Berkshire Hathaway and their last report and things, you know, Warren Buffett made a ton of his money in insurance, and when he made it in the back end, in the reinsurance business. Mm-hmm. So how insurance has always been is the insurance companies build their books, and then they insure their books to Chubb and these other back-end insurance companies. No one's making a big deal that there's no money anymore in reinsurance. Why is that?
Is it because the original insurance is just that spot on?
Well, because it's all tied together now. So what's happening is Liberty Mutual, I can write policies at Progressive at all the different places. So the machine learning helps to determine their real-time filling their buckets. So if you go for a quote, you go 1 month, you go 2 months later, that quote can be completely different because they're determining which buckets they want, which companies to go in based on the rate. So what happens is they're using rate. They can, the machine learning is so good at rating different people that they can fill that bucket and know that risk factor, and they can do it on the front end.
Is it because there's more data nowadays to collect? So they can easily look at all your driving records. They can look at your salary. They can look at your credit rating. They can look at all that stuff.
And it's all shared. So what happens is when I go to make a quote, mm-hmm. I need your permission, I need your address, and I need your I need a way to get back to you. Everything else is pre-filled from the system. Now, that's the scary, dangerous part. Now, that's why you need a human right now, because the system will just give you a number and they'll go through it. The human piece is I come in there and say, whoa, 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 that part's wrong, this part's – and then I can adjust that. But one, you maybe – a company may want more of you today. And so what happens is they use rate to move that along. So if you're not reevaluating – and my message to everyone when I meet them, you don't have to work with me, but every 2 years – now going forward, evaluate your insurance, because rate is what they use to move people. And where do you think they make that up? The people that stay.
So evaluate it within the same company if you like the company, or go to other companies?
Go to a person who can take it to multiple companies. And,
okay.
And Liberty Mutual isn't the only one that can do that. Lots of companies can, but that's why they're selling each other's, right? Like Progressive.
Okay, so they all share the data because they know that this is...
And they share, so they're spreading the risk. Because they can't afford. And again, it's more at the national level. It's more at the, you know.
So this is something like Cody would totally hate.
Yes.
Because he
yes.
Yes. We talked about privacy when he was here.
But what this is all about is about making sure that too big to fail, this is how they're spreading the risk amongst the companies. So that every company doesn't have too many of these packets. They can spread that, and they use rate. Nothing motivates people faster than rate. If I save you money, I can move. And on average, we do save people $500, $700 if they make the move, if they've been in the same place for a long time. But other ones, I'll just say, nope, you're perfect, because they dedicated you as one of the people they want to keep in their bucket. And then if you're someone that you can move, and then so that it's spreading the risk. But the
so if I'm a high risk customer and I'm paying, you know, a premium for that because I get into too many accidents. Right. So say I'm that person. Am I more likely to get moved to another bucket, or if I'm a good customer who never gets into an accident?
Well, they'll rate you out. Like they're hoping that you'll move. But then again, the different companies will one day Progressive may want that type. And again, it might want you in that type. And another day it might be.
So they're not always trying to fight for the best drivers, say. They don't care. They just want a certain amount of bad drivers.
They're balancing
it. A certain amount of good drivers.
It's all big numbers. And what happens, too, is when it goes out there, they have to – that's where we kind of look at it for people in the business who look at it. And, again, I'm not sure exactly how the actual tables – and it's not that organized, but it is semi-organized. But what really happens is there's somebody out there for that time trying to suck that type of customer in. Then when they're done, their rates go right up. But their rate can change. Like you can hit that button three times, a rate button three times in a week, and get three different rates. So it's literally to move the.
So it's like how airlines price things.
Exactly. And it's because they can now. You couldn't do that earlier, but they know everything about your home.
And it's even across state lines.
They know
it doesn't
all
matter.
About the car. Because they've already sucked in all that data from Zillow and all those other places. But it's not 100% accurate. And that's the difference of having a human do it. And this is my point about AI.
So, for example, we've been in our house 22 years, so Zillow is not accurate at all.
Exactly.
They don't know if we've finished our basement
if you go to another carrier, they're just going to take certain things. So that's where you need that human to make sure that your information is current and make sure that they're looking at all the different buckets.
So you get to see the report of all the buckets that they would fall. So you would go through and say, all right, let me look at this report and say, all right, wait, you know, he's got three kids. He doesn't have two kids or whatever.
Well, it's even easier than that. What happens is we quote it in our system, mm-hmm. and then we push it to we'll call it the market, and the market will come back, and certain ones will bid on it, and certain ones won't. So certain companies won't even take it, and then other companies, and the rates will vary between those companies dramatically. And that's where, again, sometimes it's best to stay in the company you're at, sometimes, but that doesn't happen. Without AI. That's okay. The machine learning. Do it. Because in the old days, you had this is what was happening behind the scenes, and the customer didn't benefit from it. The company paid the reinsurer, charged everybody too much, and then paid for it on the back end. What happens is that savings of not having to pay for it on the back end is getting pushed to you on the front end.
Oh.
And if you're smart.
So that's a positive thing.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. So if every 2 years you do this, you'll take advantage of it, and you won't see those large increases. And drive well. Don't put a lot of clean. I mean, that's a given.
Yeah,
but you can see some dramatic.
Can they go down to the point of looking at, like, I know they have the apps for looking at your accelerometer in your phone, or they put the little accelerometer
some
in the car.
Some of them have mobile. Some of them put it in. And what happens too is,
but they can't look at my phone and say, you know, they're not working with Google to find out my driving habits yet.
No, you have to download the app. And if you download the app, then they do that. So what happens, they give you a discount and they can run that. But the driving habits, if you give them the driving habits, again, assuming you're a good driver, they'll give you a discount just for giving them that, for being willing to participate. You'll get
right off the bat, you're obviously not hiding something.
Right,
so.
You're getting a discount. And what that is less to know what, you know, again, think on the big picture piece, and being from somebody who's running like in the corporate side and not just doing the insurance side, they're training you how to be a better driver.
Yeah.
So what happens is when you download that app, it gives you a report, and it tells you when you got a ding. So it's less about – and you have to use it for 30 to 90 days. So over 90 days, we know 30 days creates a habit.
Yeah.
So if it teaches you – if you're like conscious – because people are unconscious.
Sure.
They're on their cell phones. So those driving things, if you don't put it on, you're silly, because the decrease is to teach you to be a better driver, and you can get – theoretically, you can get between 10 to 30%. In New Jersey, you're going to see 10 to 17. No more. I've never seen anyone get more than 17%. You're going to get it because you can't drive.
Because of everybody else that's not using that app.
Well, it requires you. I mean, you go around the Somerville Circle and you don't punch it, or a Flemington Circle, you don't punch it, you're hit. So you've got to be able to, you know, do that.
Okay. So we only have a little bit of time left. Actually, time flies. We just skipped through one of the breaks, which is fine because we're allowed to do one. Skip one of them. I just wanted to make sure I asked the question about AI because we talked about this a little bit. So when we talk about AI, what are we we're talking about basically algorithms that are used to determine an output. So it's just modeling data.
Yeah. So here's the thing.
So what's the difference between what people think AI is also like thinking, right. like trying to outthink humans, but that's not what AI really is,
not at
right?
all. And the way to explain it best way, I always explain it to the colleges and people who are trying to use it and buy the AI systems, is how it works is it's all as good as the data that goes in, which is the scary part of AI. It's a training set. So it's unlike training a teacher, training a person, training anyone else along the way. So what happens is you need to have a lot of training sets. And the training sets are things that were data that was put in, and the answers are already there. So what they do is you use multiple models. And again, the quality of the AI is how many different mathematical models you're doing and the perspective of which the different angles that you're taking that from. And then you build the model that most accurately over time gives you that answer. So if you know, because the advantage is you already know the answer. So yeah, you can't do something in AI that there isn't known results. The larger the data set, the more you can go in and find, and the machine can find correlations that humans' mind can't comprehend.
Right, right.
And then what happened, but some of it could be a freak incident that just happens based on the data set or that you've put bad data in.
Right.
So if bad data's gone in and they think it's something, but the indicator was wrong, it's going to throw a flag.
Or incomplete data.
Exactly.
Like you could have like always good outcome, good outcome, good outcome, but then, oh, wait a minute, what if somebody just punctures your tire? You know, like that wasn't in the system.
Right.
You know?
So the sales team, like, again, if there's a discount for something and everyone in the sales team gives the person that discount, but that really doesn't apply to them, but the group thinks that that is, and the machine learning thinks that that's, because machine learning accepts everything as law. Okay. Like whatever data goes in, it accepts it. So that's what people are really scared about with the data, because it's as good as a source. And then when it trains things, it just goes through. So as you get through that training set, it teaches you, and then you take a last piece of data and you run it through untrained. Like you run it through and test it and say, this is what should happen. And then and then that gives you the results. And then going forward, it's all based on the past.
Hmm. So, and then another question I had that I didn't get to ask about the project scholarship that was related to that, because it's something that I know when I was talking to Cody and Brandon once about this, we're wondering if a child is born today, do you think they will be going to college?
Or do you
think college will be a different thing altogether in 20 years?
It'll be a different animal. And here's the problem. I mean, college itself, the experience, certain degrees and all, but it is a broken model. I mean, I don't think that they can go to where it is because, first of all, 49% of students on a national average graduate in 6 years. So the schools use a six-year graduation rate. That means 51% of those people got absolutely nothing to show for it except some education experience, but they have no piece of paper. What is relevant? And that's in 6 years. What is relevant 6 years later? Lifelong learning is never going to – we need to learn, and we need to be current learning more
all
than
the time.
Ever.
Yeah.
But the model of going away for 4 years in a think tank and coming back in this paradise where you live in this thing, that's not a reality that will survive, I think.
Yeah, I think – well, there's some – I guess there's still some things that maybe – I think there will be a need for some things. But I think colleges will be a lot smaller.
Well,
a lot of majors will just go away because you can – because it could be, like you said, either an apprenticeship, a lifelong learning thing, you know, like to be even in – like some things that where AI is going to be your helpful. So it would be like you just really go for a year of training on how to do accounting with AI.
Right.
And then, you know –
And
then you have to keep your certification by going every 5 years and retesting for your CPA or whatever.
Exactly. And there's going to be certain schools that survive, but the school itself has changed because what's happening, there's a trend in the mega school like ASU and some of these others where volume scale matters and they're so large. But they're having alumni housing on campus. So it's just evolving. So, yes, the core function of the college and university – don't get me wrong, it's not going to go away. It's the four-year go-away model where businesses are going to be on campus, the incubation period. Like it's a think center, and it's going to stay that think center. But for it to just be people who are post-high school for 4 years, that
right.
is what's going
on. It's
away.
Not a training center for your post-career.
No longer, yeah, it's no longer
post-career. It's a think, like you said, it's a think center. It's a place for thinking and developing skills in thinking. But for knowledge and for practical experience, it's going to be done elsewhere.
Exactly. And a different training center. And certain things like medical things. And again, like it's moving to the medical, how much of it is spent at the hospital. And then why are the hospital at the campus, or is the hospital where people need it, you know?
Or even at the local doctor's office. Like, why aren't you learning there?
And we can, because of the dissemination of knowledge and all. Yeah.
Right,
because
you could just go on a screen and learn while you're at the doctor's office helping the doctor out.
Yeah. And that's exactly what Project Scholarship is working towards, to get it to the mom and pops and to get it local, because that's the vision how we see it, is where college will be free, in that when we get to this model, when you've earned this money, we're already, you know, with some major online universities that if we get scale, they're going to give us like 2,000, you know, very discounted rates, which basically we're taking that check, instead of mailing a check, we're paying ahead of time. So you can guarantee yourself a course in this by doing it. So the whole goal is that you do the work and get paid, which brings us back to apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. But it's digital apprenticeship as opposed to, you know, it's
a physical apprenticeship. Yeah.
But you have to be there.
But I think you have to both. So I think that's something that I've done through the state, through the New Jersey Manufacturer Extension Program. So they run a physical apprenticeship, because the problem in this country is we have literally too many apprentice programs. We have to scale those down too, so that they have value, so that it's one program that everybody recognizes, instead of your program, my program, his program. Right. And so I don't know, when I leave my job, I had the company X apprenticeship, but it doesn't have anything meaning, you know, unless you're willing to learn from that guy, like what his training was, or if you knew the company. So, yeah, so that's something, too. I think that it's kind of exciting time, I think.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, definitely. And then the value of machine learning to be able to – because, again, predicting something, what the tools that we were working with the colleges and universities, it didn't just say that this is the likelihood person's going to do. It told you what to do to fix that likelihood. And that's what's happening. So what's happening in learning is – everyone's going to get their own custom learning sheet. So instead of all the students learning at the same off the same syllabus, mm-hmm. we're going to have the same basic, but it's going to teach you, like, learning as you
may start at step five, where somebody else starts at step two.
Right. And the machine learning will be able to tailor that to you to get you where. So everything becomes individualized.
So then how do we also then – we have this lost generation then, right? We have the millennials basically are going to be the lost educational generation then, right? Because they had this – college degree that doesn't really help them do anything.
Right, but then if you look back...
Are we going to have the programs that help retrain those people? We have to almost catch up some of those people, right?
But to a certain degree, but also if you look back historically, how many people were actually doing the job that they went to school with before the millennial generation? What happens is a lot of times people didn't do what they did in that degree. It's just naturally progression. They just grouped it all together because there's so much debt involved. The difference is the level of debt that they're overcoming, and that's the real difference, is what do you do with all that debt they're sitting on?
Yeah.
The experience isn't any different. Very few people actually, you know, I'm not doing accounting. You know? I mean, very few people do what they do. It's part of that overall piece.
Yeah, yeah. All right, good. We only have a few minutes left. Let's do a quick commercial break, and then we'll get through the historical story, and hopefully we'll get done before Mr. David comes here with his hockey show. So hold on.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for Modern Design. This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
For over 50 years, Hunterdon Medical Center has been a leader in delivering comprehensive medical and health services to our community. Our staff is committed to providing the highest quality of care to our patients. If you need a physician, we can refer you to over 300 of the best. Call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provide sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Okay, we're back here, Jim and Audio and Dennis Harabin, Hack Hunterdon Radio. We had a lovely discussion about AI and its application in the insurance world and in the college world. And thank you for that. And so to tie it in with a historical story, talk about the brief history of artificial intelligence. Compliments to Tanya Lewis of Live Science. She kind of made a condensed version for me, so it's easy to go through. But the beginnings of modern AI can be traced to originally the classical philosophers' attempts to describe human thinking as symbolic systems. But the formal coining of the phrase artificial intelligence didn't happen until 1956. There was a conference at Dartmouth College run by John McCarthy, and he had 10 people from different fields, MIT, cognitive scientists, Bell Labs people, IBM people at the time, and they got it funded by the Rockefeller Center to be a think tank to figure out how to move intelligent systems forward. And so the term artificial intelligence was part of their press release. And so that's where that term was originally used. So, you know, this is 1956. So then a lot of government funding was involved and there was a lot of work. But then by the 70s, specifically between 74 and 80, there was what they call the AI winter, where not much research was being done at all. It wasn't until the 80s when the British government started funding it, in part to compete with what the Japanese were doing. But then again, it collapsed again around 87 to 93 because you have the computer field, the market change. So instead of using these big general purpose computers and getting all these government funding, everything went to PC level computing. And so there was not much effort in this, and the PCs were not strong enough to do this kind of research. But then IBM brought it back in 97 with their Deep Blue, and it became the first computer to beat a chess champion when it beat Garry Kasparov. And then in 2011, Watson was created to and beat Ken Jennings in Jeopardy, and Brad Rutter, I guess, was the other guy. So, you know, this year, meaning I guess this article is from 2014, so in 2014, Eugene Gutzman captured the headline by he was able to trick judges into thinking he was his computer, his chat box, was a real person and was one of the first. He claims to be the first person to pass the Turing test, which is, again, the if you don't know, Alan Turing was a famous scientist who created a test to see if a machine was really a machine or a human, and there's different questions you could ask that you could try to fool. So, but there's controversy about it because only a third of the judges were fooled, and the bot was able to dodge some of the questions by claiming it was an adolescent who spoke English as a second language. So
that's a little loaded.
But that's still, I mean, that's, you know, if you weren't ready for that, I mean, and these do exist nowadays. I mean, we literally today at work, we get the phone call from the robot, and they're getting so smart now that, like, my office manager, Deb, said, you know, that person always calls. And I said, no, that's not a person. That's a robot. And she's like, no. I said, try it next time when he calls. Just say, like, just start asking nonsense questions. You know, like, you know, breakfast is ready, you know, and just see. And you'll hear a pause, and then it'll try to say something like, ha, 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 you know.
My test is always, can I have a credit card? I like to charge for my time, so. that takes care of any caller.
But you think they don't then go, oh, yes, please give us your credit card number.
No, no, I want your credit card. Yeah.
I remember doing it once with my son. We put it on a speaker, and I was like, watch, I'll start asking nonsense questions. And all of a sudden, the thing got stuck in a loop, and it was like going, dap, 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 like that, broke it. So yeah, so you got to be careful. If you get those phone calls, and it sounds like, I mean, they're using a recorded human voice, but they're doing it in such a smart way. And Google, actually, I have a Pixel phone.
Right.
And even with the Pixel 2, they have call screening now. So right. If you call me and I can hit the call screening button, it'll send a message saying, hey, this person can't answer the phone. Can you please tell me what you want to call them about.
Well, they had to scale back and reserve their calling system, Duo or whatever it was called. That now it can only do reservations at restaurants.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because it was too good and it was freaking people out.
Yeah, I saw the demonstration of that, the live demo where, you know, Google has a way of making dinner reservations. So you just say, okay, I want to make a dinner reservation for this restaurant at 6 o'clock for 7 people. And it'll call the restaurant. It'll say, hi, I'm making a reservation for somebody. It doesn't say that it's a robot. It just...
Well, they had to add that.
Well, they had to add it. So when they did it, they were able to, like... And the person on the other end is like, oh, I'm sorry, but we don't have tables at 6. Can they do 7? And then it'll say, well, let me find out. And then it'll call you back and say, can you do 7? You say yes. And it calls back. Say, yeah, I'm calling back for that reservation at 7. We'll take it. You know, so it's pretty cool stuff. Let's see. So I'm surprised Dennis is not here yet. But we're at the end of the show. See, it's that fast.
Oh, that was excellent.
1 hour goes by really fast.
Very painless.
So thank you, Dennis, for coming over to be a guest.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you all the new fans who are watching on Facebook and YouTube. The Chamber for – there he is, giving me opportunity and platform. Mark and his team for economic development for their encouragement and support. Doing a special shout-out this week to Jeff, Greg, and Marina, who are dealing with some health issues. It's a crazy week for that. The gang back at Zero Surge, Debbie, Don, Donna, Deb, Jen, Tony, Dave, John, my wife and kids, and to all the rest of you innovators out there, the original meaning of innovator was that you were a rebel. So keep rebelling against the doubters and make your ideas a reality. And that's the show.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Miami-Dade County's mayor is getting in front of Hurricane Dorian, reminding residents now is the time to make sure hurricane plans have been updated.
These are things that we should all have been prepared for. If you haven't, it's probably a good time to buy some food for 3 days, have some water stocked up for 3 days, make sure your evacuation plan is in place.
Miami-Dade Mayor Carlos Jimenez says no decision has been made about possible evacuations or opening shelters, as now the county will operate normally. Talking to reporters at the Pentagon on Wednesday, Defense Secretary Mark Esper says China remains a top concern for the U.S. military.
It is clear that China is engaging in a deliberate strategy to undermine the stability of the region. It is clear the values and behaviors of the Chinese Communist Party do not align with the vast majority of states.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Let's think about customization presented by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
Liberty Mutual customizes your auto insurance so you only pay for what you need. So why aren't more things in life customizable? Why isn't a burger cheaper when you ask for no onions? I don't want them. So shouldn't you deduct the price of the onions? Right? Otherwise, I'm paying for the onions, but I'm not receiving any onions.
Go to LibertyMutual.com for a customized quote and you could save.
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
Coverage is underwritten by Liberty Mutual Insurance Company and affiliates. Equal housing insurer.
You knew the risks when you decided to drive drunk. There could be a crash. People could get hurt or killed. But that didn't stop you, did it? You knew you could get arrested. You could incur huge legal expenses. And you could possibly even lose your job. You were well aware of the consequences of driving drunk. But one thing's for sure. You were wrong when you said it was no big deal. Drive sober or get pulled over. This message brought to you by NHTSA.
Fentanyl overdoses have spiked from 2,000 in 2007 to 32,000 in 2018, due in part to drug dealers using powerful narcotics to boost the effects of heroin and other drugs. As authorities continue to seize fentanyl across the United States, former Florida Attorney General Republican Pam Bondi joins Fox News and says,
"Fentanyl, Ainsley, is 50 to 70 more times powerful than heroin, if you think about that. It just takes a few grains to kill you. This massive shipment really could have wiped out a small state in our country."
Senator Johnny Isaacson is resigning at the end of 2019. The Georgia Republican said in a statement that he's leaving the job he loves because his health challenges are taking a toll on himself, his family, and his staff. His Parkinson's has been progressing, and he's continuing physical therapy to recover from a fall in July. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
America's built and based on liberties and freedoms.
Liberty HealthShare brings that to healthcare. The liberty of choosing your own doctor. The liberty of choosing your own hospital. Liberty HealthShare makes healthcare affordable to millions of Americans. Ignite your liberty. Sharing plans starting at $199 for a single, $399 for a couple, and no matter how big the family, only $529. That's $529 for the entire family. To learn how you can save, go to lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com.
The bureaucracy of our healthcare system continues to amaze many people. USA Radio Network's John Hunt has just another example.
Former Coast Guardsman Amanda Wolf went to the emergency room because her appendix was about to burst in 2016. She had two kinds of insurance, a private plan she paid for, and her Veterans Affairs benefits. The appendectomy went well, and she made a speedy recovery. Her private insurance covered more than $20,000 of the bill for the hospital stay, but 6 months later, the VA denied her claim for the roughly $2,500 that remained, putting her in a tough financial situation. She's been appealing ever since.
It's alarming. It's worrisome. Do I hope that it'll make a difference? I do. Am I confident that it will? Not very confident. I'm hopeful that it will create some change for, you know, even not just for myself, but all the other veterans who are impacted.
And one recent